Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 333, titled Forward into the Past, subtitled Connecting the Dots, Part 6. Once again, we're going to be talking about the terrorist blitzkrieg of September 11th of 2001. Inside one of the program, we took a look at an op-ed column from the San Jose Mercury News by David Ignatius, in which he ruminated about the need for our intelligence community to recruit terrorist informants like Ali Hassan Salome, the mastermind of the 1972 Olympics massacre in Munich, Germany. Ali Hassan Salome was the son of Hassan Salome, a key operative on behalf of SS Major and Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, Haj Amin al-Husseini, a key player in what I call the Underground Reich, and a person we've spoken about many times in the past. One of the reason that I'm undertaking this study of networking that we're doing in this program, and that's the key word, networking, is to take a look at the kinds of relationships that I believe were utilized by what I call the Underground Reich to not only double on those democratic, with a small d, elements of U.S. intelligence that are sincerely opposed to this type of thing, but in fact, I think the types of relationships that are exemplified by the CIA-Ali Hassan Salome relationship have in fact been used against the United States. And again, if people are wondering, well, how some of these dots connect up, there are other broadcasts, many other broadcasts, about the September 11th incident and many other broadcasts providing background. Those are available from a tape duplication service and CD duplication service called Spitfire that I will tell you about later in the program. And the vast bulk of the For the Record programs are now available either streaming and or available for download on Real Audio from sister station WFMU-FM. More about that later in the program. Now, again, the key word here is networking, and we're going to take a look at relationships between elements of U.S. intelligence, elements of the Underground Reich, explicitly fascist and SS-connected units. We're going to take a look at relationships between some of those elements and not only right-wing terrorism, but also extreme left-wing terrorism and Yaquiist elements involving third world liberation movements, extreme left and extreme right elements forged together in an anti-American and anti-Israeli and anti-Semitic phalanx. And the Yaquiism is the Yaquiist as a reference to the encyclopedic dreamer of the day, Francis Parker Yaqui in the Postwar Fascist International by Kevin Coogan, whom I've interviewed on this program many times. We are going to excerpt that book later in the program. Now, forward into the past. We were looking at the Olympics massacre in 1972 at the Munich Olympics. That was masterminded by Ali Hassan Salome, the son of key Grand Mufti aide Hassan Salome. Ali Hassan Salome was working as a CIA informant when he allegedly masterminded the 1972 Olympics massacre. What we're going to do now is to take a look at an individual named Hans Langemann, a German intelligence official who worked for the BND, the German intelligence service that was evolved from the Reinhard Gehlen Nazi Eastern Front spy outfit. We've looked at that in many programs available from Spitfire and or available for download from WFMU or streaming. And we're going to take a look at Hans Langemann. Now, in RFA 22... that was excerpted inside one of this program, there was an article that was carried in the New York Times on March 19th of 1982. It was an AP story called titled Bond Security Aid is Seized After Disclosures on Secrets. This article alluded to Hans Langemann, a former BND official who was the security director for the 1972 Olympics. That Olympics, of course, turned out to be anything but secure. We're going to take a look at Hans Langemann in a later incarnation. We're going to take a look at the book The New Reich, subtitled Violent Extremism in Unified Germany and Beyond. This book was authored by Michael Schmidt, published in hardcover by Pantheon Books, and copyright 1993, ISBN 0-679-42578-0. Now, Hans Langemann, after becoming the security director of the 1972 Olympics, worked for Faschingsschutz, a domestic German intelligence agency. And we're going to take a look at his role in providing an alibi for Karl-Heinz Hoffmann, one of the top German neo-Nazis, the leader of the Sportgruppe Hoffmann, one of the top German neo-Nazi groups in the second half of the 20th century. And the Sportgruppe Hoffmann appears to have been the executive element in the Oktoberfest bombing, another Munich terrorist incident, of September 26, 1980. That incident was attributed to a lone nut member of the Sportgruppe Hoffmann, but an alibi for Karl-Heinz Hoffmann was provided by the very same Hans Langemann, who was the security director for the 1972 Munich Olympics, which turned out to be anything but secure. Reading now from the New Reich. Then there is the matter of the bombing at the Munich Oktoberfest on September 26, 1980, in which 13 people died and over 200 were injured. Once again, the tracks led straight to Karl-Heinz Hoffmann. But none other than Hans Langemann, chief of Bavaria's Verfassungsschutz, gave him an alibi. According to his testimony, Hoffmann was in Neuburg all day under observation by his agency. And there was an elaborate cover-up in the Munich Oktoberfest bombing. And it should be noted that even though the evidence pointed very strongly in the direction of Karl-Heinz Hoffmann himself, a lone nut member of the Sportgruppe Hoffmann, Gundolf Kohler, was fingered as the perpetrator. And even though experts testified that the bomb that was set off at the Munich Oktoberfest of 1980 was too heavy for one person to carry, nonetheless, Gundolf Kohler wound up being the lone nut, alleged perpetrator of the Oktoberfest bombing. What we're going to do now is to look at some evidentiary tributaries running between not only the Olympics massacre, once again, of Munich of 1972, but we're going to take a look at a terrorist and fascist milieu overlapping elements of U.S. intelligence, in particular Alan Dulles, who handled the corporate masking for the Bush family's Third Reich companies. The Bush family having been deeply involved with the financing of Nazi Germany, as we've looked at in numerous broadcasts. Alan Dulles also, of course, very close to King Ibn Saud, the founder of the modern Saudi state. By the way, I made a mnemonic error. Mohammed bin Laden, Osama bin Laden's father, was not actually an in-law of King Ibn Saud. He was very, very close personally and professionally to Ibn Saud and married many of his daughters off to key members of the Saudi elite. But I fused a synapse, so to speak. For the record, 292 has a description of the exact text from the Financial Times of London that will serve as an explanation for the confusion. Yes, Ibn Saud and Mohammed bin Laden, very, very close personally and professionally. One of Osama's daughters is married to Mullah Omar, the head of the Taliban, but Ibn Saud not actually an in-law of the bin Laden family, otherwise very close. We're going to take a look at a comment by one of the top German Nazi activists, a fellow named Horst Mahler, an attorney, about the September 11th attacks. Research credit on this goes to a member of the listening audience. This comes from the Daily Telegraph of London and was taken from the Telegraph's website at news.telegraph.co.uk. This article is by Toby Helm in Berlin. And this is from September 25th of 2001. This article is titled, German Right-Winger Applauds Terrorists, and it's about Horst Mahler. One of the most prominent extreme right-wingers in German politics has caused uproar by praising the terrorist attacks against America on primetime television. Horst Mahler, a former member of the terrorist Red Army faction, also known as the Baader-Meinhof Gang, and now a leading voice in the National Democratic Party, said America had got what it deserved and described the victims as, quote, collateral damage, unquote. Mr. Mahler, a lawyer, was imprisoned during the 1970s for his terrorism links. He said on a political opinion program, Panorama, quote, at last the Americans have been hit in the heart, unquote. He described the hijackers as warriors prepared to kill themselves, unquote, in the cause of breaking the power of money, unquote. language one sees often coming from the far left, also not unlike language being used by elements of Al-Qaeda, and also language that one sees coming from the extreme right as well. Horst Mahler is a very interesting fellow because he essentially bridges many of those gaps, and I think that his political career, running from the alleged extreme left, the Red Army faction or Baader-Meinhof gang, to the extreme right, the NPD, now banned in Germany, in many ways embraces the underground Reich slash Yaquiist milieu that I believe was involved as the operational element in the attacks of 9/11. And by the way, my reference to Yaquiism should not be misunderstood as constituting an endorsement by the brilliant Kevin Coogan, the author of a book we're about to excerpt, for my working hypothesis on September 11th. I'm simply drawing on his book for some of the documentation for the forces I'm talking about. We're going to take a look now at Horst Mahler in what his alleged left-wing manifestation or incarnation as a member of the Red Army faction or Baader-Meinhof gang, an extreme left-wing terrorist organization that ravaged Germany in much of the 1970s. This is excerpted from the Searchlight magazine's issue of October of 2001. It's number 316, and this particular article is by Wolfgang Schmidt. It's titled Mahler, From Left to Right. Subtitled, Horst Mahler is nowadays one of the most prominent figures of the German extreme right. However, for a large part of his life, his political sympathies lay at the other end of the political spectrum. A prominent left-wing lawyer and student leader, he was a member of the left-wing terrorist Red Army faction in the 1970s. Yet, where one might expect to find a great rift in the development of his ideology, what he himself sees is continuity. And we're going to take a look at Mahler's pronouncements about the 1972 Olympics massacre, again masterminded by Ali Hassan Salameh, CIA informant, son of Grand Mufti Aide Hassan Salameh, and an individual that we described at considerable length inside one of this program. And again, the Baader-Meinhof gang, or Red Army faction at this point, included Horst Mahler, who applauded the September 11th attacks. Skipping down in this article from the Searchlight's issue of October of 2001. During the summer of 1972, most of the members of the founding generation of the RAF were captured after an extensive police operation following a wave of violent bomb attacks in several German cities. The first statement from the prisoners was released in November of 1972. It concentrated on the events of September 5th, when the Palestinian terrorist group Black September kidnapped members of the Israeli team at the Olympic Games in Munich. The text, usually ascribed to either Meinhof or Mahler, is entitled, The Operation of the Black September in Munich, on the Strategy of the Anti-Imperialist Struggle. And again, note the similarity in rhetoric to some, frankly, shockingly anti-American elements of the contemporary left, whom I frankly would describe as quasi-Yaquiist. Continuing. The Munich kidnapping was a complete disaster for all involved. After 2 days of negotiations, the Palestinians and the kidnapped Israelis were taken to a military airport to be flown to Cairo. The police operation to free the Israelis resulted in the death of all 9 Israeli hostages, 5 Palestinian kidnappers, and 1 German police officer. Mahler and Meinhof nevertheless described the attack as a brave commando operation against Zionist soldiers who acted as sportsmen in Munich. The lengthy declaration develops that proposition, stating that the attack was anti-imperialist, anti-fascist, and internationalist. Israel's grief is described as bogus, quote, for it burned its sportsmen like the Nazis, the Jews, fuel for imperialist extermination politics, unquote. Moshe Dayan, the Prime Minister of Israel at the time, is Israel's Himmler, German National Socialism being only the pretext for, quote, the utterly fascist system of developed imperialism implemented by Israel and the other Western metropolises, unquote. And again, note the similarity between the sentiment and to a certain extent the rhetoric with some, quote, progressive, unquote, elements that, if not actually echoing Horst Mahler's applauding of the September 11th attacks, at least in spirit, are at one with Horst Mahler. And again, note that Mahler endorsed the Olympics massacre of 1972. Note again that Hans Langemann, the BND security director for that very unsecure Olympics, was also the Verfassungsschutz official who provided an alibi for Karl-Heinz Hoffmann, the apparent executive authority in the Munich Oktoberfest bombing of September of 1980. Now, we're going to take a look at, and we're going to read an excerpt of a very important book that I've used many times in the past and whose author I've interviewed many times in the past. This book is the aforementioned Dreamer of the Day, subtitled Francis Parker Yockey and the Postwar Fascist International. The book was authored by Kevin Coogan, published in soft cover by Otano Media, Incorporated, copyright 1999. ISBN number is 1-57027-039-2, and the book was edited by Dave Mandel, an on-air personality on sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey. Now, we're going to take a look at a key Swiss national who became a key Nazi operative both during World War II and after the conclusion of the Second World War. This is an individual named François Genoud. We spelled last name G-E-N-O-U-D. We took a look at Genoud in miscellaneous archive shows M19 and M21 about the fascist third position. And that fascist third position, which could be said to, in many ways, overlap Yockeyism, is an element of international fascism that seeks to unite not only extreme left-wingers, but also Third World liberation movements, or at least ostensible anti-imperialist movements, in an anti-American and anti-Israeli and anti-Semitic phalanx to be used to ultimately realize the political goals of the Third Reich, namely world conquest, the destruction or subjugation not only of the United States, but of the United Kingdom, and the annihilation of world Jewry. We're going to take a look at a number of connecting links which are going to link François Genoud with Paul Diekhoff, an SS intelligence officer and member of the SD, who later became a key official of the BKA, the West German Federal Police. Diekhoff, in turn, had very strong connections to Alan Dulles, the lawyer who effected the corporate masking of the Bush family's Nazi front companies in World War II. And we're also going to take a look at Paul Diekhoff's connections and François Genoud's connections to, among others, Haj Amin al-Husseini, the mentor of Hassan Salameh, Ali Hassan Salameh's father. We're going to take a look at connections between François Genoud and Ali Hassan Salameh himself, the mastermind of the Olympics massacre of 1972. We're also going to take a look at Genoud's role in shepherding Paul Diekhoff to his role as head of Interpol. Diekhoff headed up Interpol, the international police organization, when the Olympics massacre took place in 1972, and Genoud was instrumental in lobbying Middle Eastern governments to support Genoud's ascension to that position. We're also going to take a look at connections between this group and extreme left-wing terrorists, including Carlos the Jackal, allegedly mentored by the Triple Wilson team, about whom we've spoken so many times in the past, and also an organization called the PFLP, or Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, headed up by Dr. Wadi Haddad and George Habash. Remember the PFLP, because we're going to come back to it later. Turning to Appendix E, titled Chic François, Friend to Hitler and Carlos the Jackal, we read from Kevin Coogan's Dreamer of the Day. On May 30, 1996, an obscure Swiss banker named François Genoud committed suicide in Geneva, Switzerland. From the brief mention of his death in the New York Times, one would not know that one of the most important figures in the history of 20th century terrorism had died. And how many men can say that they were friends with both Adolf Hitler and Carlos the Jackal? A Swiss citizen born in Lausanne in 1915, Genoud became rapidly pro-Nazi in the early 1930s. After a trip to Germany as a teenager, he never forgot the thrill he felt shaking Adolf Hitler's hand. During World War II, Genoud became extremely close to an SD lieutenant named Paul Diekhoff, who would later head the German Federal Police, the Bundeskriminalamt, or BKA, before being elected president of Interpol in 1968. The two men, by the way, the SD is the S Intelligence Service, continuing, the two men traveled together across occupied Europe. Diekhoff would later claim that he had defected from the German army in August of 1942 and lived clandestinely in Belgium, where he embraced the anti-Nazi cause. Curiously, the traitor's, unquote, salary continued to be sent to his wife until January of 1944. Now we're going to take a look at the relationship between Alan Dulles and Paul Diekhoff, and later between Diekhoff, Alan Dulles, and François Genoux and the Grand Mufti. Diekhoff eventually ended up in Switzerland, where he received support from Genoux. Diekhoff went there to approach Alan Dulles, head of the local OSS, pretending to be an anti-Nazi. At the time, his boss, RSHA head Ernst Kaltenbrunner, was also sanctioning the Free Austria movement, unquote, yet another group of, quote, anti-Nazi, unquote, Nazis intent on befriending Alan Dulles. Diekhoff quickly established a working relationship with one of the most mysterious American spies of World War II, the Japanese-born and Yale-educated Paul Blum, a top Dulles lieutenant who would later vouch for Diekhoff's anti-Nazi credentials. Genoux, too, was in the thick of things, having established a friendship with SS General Karl Wolff, leader of the German team in Italy that negotiated Operation Sunrise with Dulles. Operation Sunrise was the complete surrender of the SS in Germany, or in Italy, to Alan Dulles. Shortly after the war, Genoux acquired the publishing rights to the works of Adolf Hitler, Martin Bormann, and Joseph Goebbels. He also played a major, if murky, role in aiding fugitive Nazi war criminals. Another key player in the post-war Nazi underground resident in Switzerland was SD Colonel Eugen Dolman, General Wolff's chief lieutenant in talks with Dulles. Besides Wolff, Dolman and Genoux had another friend in common, Haj Amin al-Husseini, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem. Genoux first met the Grand Mufti in Jerusalem in 1936, and again in Berlin during the war. Dolman also maintained links to the Grand Mufti. Skipping down, the reference here is to François Genoux and his connection to an extreme left-wing French attorney named Jacques Vergès, who later worked with many extreme right-wing elements, including SS officer Klaus Barbie, who also went to work for U.S. intelligence. Now note the links here between Genoux and Vergès and the PFLP and Ali Hassan Salome. Notice also the links between that milieu and the Baader-Meinhof gang, or Red Army faction, including, as we've seen, Horst Mahler. And notice the role of François Genoux in lobbying for the ascension of Paul's former SS colleague, Paul Diekhoff, to be the head of Interpol, which Diekhoff was at the time of the Olympics massacre. After the 1967 war, Genoux and Vergès would reunite to support the Arab struggle against Israel. On February 18, 1969, members of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, or PFLP, attacked an El Al plane on the tarmac of Zurich's Kloten Airport. When the trial of three of the PFLP militants began in November 1969 in Winterthur, Switzerland, both Genoux and Vergès were in the courtroom serving as advisors to the defendants. Genoux's closest radical Arab friend was PFLP co-founder Dr. Wadi Haddad. A Greek Orthodox Christian, Haddad fled Palestine in 1948. He then studied medicine with his fellow Greek Orthodox colleague George Habash at the American University in Beirut. In the early 1950s, Haddad and Habash founded the Arab Nationalist Movement, or ANM, which published a small journal called Vengeance. Wadi Haddad, who was far more a man of action than a theorist like Habash, took command of the PFLP's overseas operations. He soon attracted support from a variety of allies, including the Japanese Red Army, the Baader-Meinhof Group Red Army faction, parenthetically including Horst Mahler, the Irish National Liberation Army, an IRA splinter group, and individual volunteers like Ilich Sanchez Ramirez, better known as Carlos the Jackal. Another PFLP volunteer was a young Swiss man named Bruno Breguet. On June 23rd, Breguet was arrested in Haifa, Israel, while on a PFLP bombing mission. After his arrest, Genoux organized a campaign for his release from prison. Although he had been sentenced to 15 years, Breguet was allowed to leave Israel in 1977. By the early 1980s, he was an important member of the Carlos Network in Europe. As for Haddad, he adored the Swiss banker and dubbed him Chic François. After Haddad's death from cancer in an East Berlin hospital on March 27, 1978, Janoux continued to maintain close ties with his terrorist network. Janoux also worked with the Palestine Liberation Organization, or PLO, in particular its Black September terrorist network, headed by Ali Hassan Salameh, the Red Prince, who was assassinated by the Israeli Secret Service on November 22, 1979. One of Janoux's intermediaries to the PLO was Fawad el-Shamali, a former student leader with the Syrian National Social Party that had been destroyed after a failed coup attempt in Lebanon. Janoux also developed excellent ties to Libya through his Egyptian friend Fatih el-Dib, who introduced him to Abdel Mouman el-Honi, the director of the Libyan Secret Service. He handled Libyan contributions to the PLO and helped mediate relations between the Libyans and the IRA through Jean Lostellier, a Breton nationalist and former Waffen-SS volunteer. On September 5, 1972, Black September terrorists murdered 11 Israeli athletes at the Olympic Games in Munich. The head of Interpol at the time of the attack was Janoux's old friend Paul Diekhoff. Janoux had lobbied the secret services of the Middle East to support Diekhoff's bid to become Interpol president. Diekhoff's Interpol proved highly reluctant to get itself involved in stopping terrorism. Not necessarily all that shocking in light of the background. Note again, Janoux's many connections to Middle Eastern elements, including the Libyan Secret Service. As mentioned in that passage that I just read you, Janoux had strong connections to the PFLP, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, which, in the aftermath of the September 11th attacks, assassinated an Israeli cabinet minister. That, in turn, prompted an Israeli retaliation with a military foray into Palestinian townships. That, in turn, has heated up the entire question. Of the Middle East, that is, in the wake of September 11th. San Jose Mercury News, Thursday, October 18th of the year 2001. Article by Michael Matza of the MATZA of the Mercury News Middle East Bureau. Dateline Jerusalem headline, Israel wants Arafat to hand over assassins. Skipping down. Palestinian police reportedly arrested two senior members of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, or PFLP, a militant group that opposes negotiations with Israel in the Gaza Strip, and went to the homes of two other PFLP officials but failed to find them. And skipping down, the PFLP claimed responsibility for the assassination of Israeli Tourism Minister Rehan Zaevi, and they cited, skipping down again, PFLP claimed responsibility, citing Israel's targeted killing of its leader, Mustafa Zebri. So again, note the many connections between these dots, and this is the type of milieu that I believe was used to double on the United States through the underground Reich on September 11th. I've alluded to other programs. Those are available from a CD and tape duplication service called Spitfire, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email mail@spitfirelist.com. There's a list of and description of the various programs available from Spitfire on the Real Audio Equipped Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. The descriptions for the record programs have been annotated since June of 2000. Sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey, has been archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. Many of the programs and more recent programs are streaming at wfmu.org/Dave Emery, one word. Virtually the entire remainder of the For the Record series is available for download only on Real Audio from another longer URL. There are links between the WFMU website and the Spitfire and the For the Record section of the Spitfire website to that longer URL. And again, sister station WFMU has virtually the entire For the Record series now available on Real Audio. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 333, Forward into the Past, Connecting the Dots, Part 6, being recorded on October 28th of 2001. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.